The Basement Window is written and produced by GM Napic. This episode prompted by Luke Price. Ladies, gentlemen, and variations thereupon, gather round the basement window and hear this tale. The Tomb of the Forgotten. No one would ever know that the McGuile Expedition had taken place. Andy McGuile, of the McGuile Expedition, had spent a pretty penny acquiring a long-lost map to a long-lost island, and even more making certain that only he and his crew knew of it. McGuile had a long reach, and within a few weeks, it was made certain that his expedition would be the only one to set foot in the listless archipelago. Yes, Andy McGuile had a very long reach, though when he gave an order, anyone but him would carry it out. When his boots first plunged indulgently in the black mud of the seventh island of the listless archipelago, McGuile made no effort to hide his disgust. In fact, his first words in this new place were just to make his disinterest in it more evident. "More mud and woods," he called to his crew. "Honestly, who would bother drawing a map here, and who would want it?" The irony of their boss's vague condemnation was not lost on those doing the work around him. But aside from the most easily formulated jabs and the rare snicker from the men farthest away, no one spoke up. McGuile busied himself with the least busy work, barking at the men setting up the tents, the tables, the temporary work and supply stations, then barking at his fellow explorers to hurry up with their gear, then barking at Stan specifically to hurry up with his own gear. "I want this over with soon, Stan," he yelled, despite their closeness. "And as soon as we get back to the States, I want you hunting the next find. I swear to God, if the next expedition is as fruitless as this one has been so far, you'll spend the rest of the decade looking for ice in Madagascar." Stan's wit said, "I would spend my life in Madagascar to avoid you." But his mouth said, "Yes, sir," for the sake of his paycheck. And so, trying and failing to shield himself from the strong wind of the coming evening, Stan set about packing two bags, each with a flashlight, rations and water, a length of rope, and a pack of matches. Stan kept the prized map in his front pocket, along with some cheap cigarettes. In McGuile's bag, Stan made sure to add a second flask for whiskey and a pack of expensive cigars. Just as Stan was fastening the two packs to his person, his boss came up behind him. "Stan," he started with menace, "the map?" Stan fought to hold in a groan and unceremoniously handed over the map in question without making eye contact. It was only when the larger man had moved on to yelling at Heffy that Stan allowed his hands to curl into fists, though he quickly let them down to help Stafer with his things, all the while doing his best to keep the lighter gear out of the wind. McGuile led a small party into the immediate woods, Stan walking right behind him with tools and supplies for two men, Stafer behind Stan, and Heffy behind Stafer. Each man's ears were sharp for the sounds of infinite island-dwelling dangers provided by their imaginations. Just as they were sharp for all manner of creature, they were stung by the constant slighting from their leader. Going on and on about their tight scheduling, the anchoring of the ship being too late, resulting in their path now growing darker, and the increasing need for flashlights, which were eventually retrieved and turned on as the natural light of day faded. When it was too dark to navigate by easily spotted landmarks, Stan found the map forced back into his hands by a fumbling McGuile, who still refused to be second in line. "I'll be the first to find anything of worth," he explained in a huff. Once more, Stan had to make an effort to unclench his fists. Had he turned around, he may have caught Heffy giving their boss a dirty look on his behalf, but he trudged forward. McGuile was the first to lay eyes on the group's destination several minutes later. A dark obelisk imposed itself on a modest clearing, centered inside a knee-high stone fence open at the end facing its new onlookers. The open side of the fence revealed a short pedestal that ramped to the ground, as though to invite guests to stand close to the central monument. It seemed the weather had left the place untouched. Indeed, the violent wind which had badgered the McGuile expedition had not followed them here, paying respect to an ancient place through distance. Least privy to nature's warning was McGuile himself, who marched up to the obelisk without reverence, all the while monologuing, "Finally, something! Heffy, take pictures. Everyone point your flashlights at me for better lighting. It'll have to do until the morning." McGuile quickly fell into directing his own photo shoot, to the well-hidden chagrin of his associates. Heffy held the camera, his teeth clenching tighter with each command, to himself and his friends alike. Their boss was insistent that his whole body be illuminated, a difficult demand with only 3 flashlights to work with. Even at their most flattering angles, McGuile cast far too many shadows on the monument behind him. When the shadow problem was corrected, one side of his face was far too dark, and the man would not be portrayed as sinister. Giving up, he cursed at Stan for not convincing him to bring a photography crew. With his vanity as satisfied as it would be under the conditions, McGuile set about running his hands over the obelisk's markings, more to seem contemplative in front of the other men than to find anything himself. He ordered, quite unnecessarily, that Stafer, Stan, and Heffy follow behind him with their lights as he moved to the right, pushing his hands over the stone surface without scrutiny. Stepping back as though to read the symbols that were nonsense to him, and then again directing his entourage around him, sure to pause on certain hieroglyphs, just to look. Just to look like he was looking, thinking to himself, "No one will say I didn't examine my discovery, personally." Finally, McGuile and the other men moved on to the back of the obelisk. Before the other men's lights even touched that side, McGuile felt a bump under his hand, which depressed at his touch. All 4 men jumped back in surprise except for Stafer, who quickly circled the entire monument and sprinted up the path where the group had entered. An eerie light had begun to crawl from the base of the obelisk all the way up to the tip, following most brightly in the space created by its carved hieroglyphs. A rumble came from the front of the site, enticing each man to circle around and see the ground there shifting apart. For 10 feet out from the base of the obelisk, 2 great doors struggled to escape each other beneath an accumulation of dirt that must have been built up over centuries undisturbed. Finally, the mass of earth atop the doors seemed to give way, and let the doors slide back into whatever hidden space lay beneath the dirt. In 2 great sheets, the topsoil fell into the cavern below. From his perspective in front of his expedition mates, McGuile could see the dirt resting in a pile not too far down, and though he had not regained his wits quite yet, he found it second nature to demand Heffy and Stan regain theirs immediately, and point their flashlights down so he could see. Stan's tongue could no longer be held, and so he blurted, "So you're not thinking of going down there, right? You see the glowing obelisk? I feel like that's a bad sign." McGuile was regaining himself quite quickly indeed. He retorted, "I don't care. It's a door opener. I'm only interested in the door and whatever's under it, and how much I can manage to auction it off for. Give me my rope." Stan made no further comment, and Heffy made no comment at all. It would turn out the rope was unnecessary. The platform to which the trio descended only brought them chest-deep into the tomb. They would all be able to climb out fairly easily upon their exit. McGuile insisted on going on first, now carrying his own flashlight from Stan's pack, while Stan and Heffy walked behind him. The tomb took them on no twists or turns, but continually downward by way of black stone steps, large and plain, but the walls were carved in more ancient symbols that meant nothing of coherence to its New Age inhabitants. There were no mice, no bugs, not even a single cobweb or any dust beyond what the 3 men tracked inside. Miguel quickened his pace when he saw a scarlet glow at the bottom of the tunnel. A semicircular room greeted him, bearing only a pedestal at the center of the wall, which served as a throne to a skull whose eyes provided the room's ambient light and pulsing sound unheard until now. No, not a pulse. Chanting. The chanting of thousands, demanding something. Something stolen from them. Though none of the men listening understood the words, they all understood the meaning. It was in their hearts as much as their brains. Naturally, it was Miguel who first moved to grab the artifact, and just as he did, left his compatriots without any light, and the spiritual glow emanating from the skull was seemingly shut off. For a moment, Heffy and Stan froze. But when nothing further happened, they found themselves less relieved and more aggravated at Miguel for having robbed their shared discovery of its natural impact. He saw their irritation, but misinterpreted it as envy of his new prize. Scoffing, Miguel pushed past the two men and back up the stairs, hugging the skull tight. Stan wanted to say that Miguel had acted recklessly, that he could have gotten himself and everyone else killed. This was true. Heffy wanted to say that he was tired of exerting himself for his boss's benefit, to no meaningful compensation of his own. Only Miguel actually said anything. "This artifact is going to fetch a lot of hefty bits," he stated pompously over his shoulder. "Once we track down Stafer and perhaps wring his neck for abandoning me, he'll have to assess its worth. Stan, you'll organize an auction right here on the Discovery site. Keep it cheap, and call high bidders. Hefty, you'll have the other lots brought down from the ship. But first, you'll have to get me a brandy. I'll be celebrating while you work." The two took a long moment to look at each other discreetly before pushing out their very nearly sardonic responses. "Yes, sir." Miguel pushed past the two men and back up the stairs, hugging the skull tight. Stan could not help but feel something familiar. Perhaps he was remembering all the other times Miguel had taken credit for his own discoveries, only to auction them off to other rich parasites. "This artifact is going to fetch a lot of hefty bits," said Miguel, but Stan wasn't quite listening. He stared openly into the eyes of the perfect white skull, its empty sockets an abyss. 3 downward arrows stuck out at him between the eyes. "Stan," said Miguel, getting the attention of the man's ears, but not his eyes. "You'll organize an auction right here at the Discovery site." Stan stopped listening there, because he knew Miguel well enough by now to know just what his budget would be, and just who to call, which would be cheaper than last auction and richer than the last buyers, respectively. Stan's eyes remained locked on those of the skull, and the tiny orange pricks forming deep within each socket. He knew instinctively the right moment to say, "Yes, sir." Scoffing, Miguel pushed past the two men and back up the stairs, hugging the skull tightly. "This artifact is going to fetch a lot of hefty bids," said Miguel, and Stan could reason that the rest of his new tirade would not be of note, because it was always, "Stafer will appraise the find, Stan will organize the auction, Heffy will unload the lots." This was always Stan's job. There was no need to always tell him every time. They were ashes, Stan realized. Little ashes glowing in the center of each eye socket. And from each little ash, a flame was beginning to grow. The skull must be growing warm, surely. Scoffing, Miguel pushed past the two men and back up the stairs, hugging the skull tightly. "This artifact is going to fetch a lot of hefty bids." Stan's self-worth could not take another second. He interrupted on cue from the 3 arrows on the skull's forehead, which were now glowing a bright orange. "Is that all you think about?" Miguel turned around faster than Heffy or Stan knew he could. "Excuse me?" Heffy took no notice, transfixed by the eyes of the skull, now beginning to shine with tiny orange pinpricks. Scoffing, Miguel pushed past the two men, hugging the skull tightly. Stan felt the skull's gaze on his heart, felt righteousness, felt fury at his mistreatment at Miguel's hands, and pushed back. Stumbling, Miguel held the skull even closer. "Stan!" he yelled. "You are out of line!" And Stan reared up. "I should be out of line! We all should!" Scoffing, Miguel pushed past the two men and back up the stairs, hugging the skull tightly. Before he could get a word out, Stan made a grab for the skull. Heffy followed his lead, but rather than going for the skull, punched Miguel in the nose. Miguel went down, his head smacking off the floor comically. Tearing the skull from his hand, Stan bashed it against his boss's head once, then again when he continued to move, and a few more times just because it felt good. Until Heffy put a hand on his friend's shoulder. "Good job," said Heffy. "Now let's get out of here." Breathing hard, Stan made an effort to loosen his grip on the skull, which remained ever as dark and lifeless as it had been. "What about the body?" he asked. Heffy shook his head. "With any luck, everyone will just forget about him. We'll divide the ship's inventory amongst the crew and go home." Stan nodded shakily, taking one last look at the dead Miguel, and rose up the steps, the perfect white skull swinging between himself and Heffy. Once the door was closed, the obelisk dimmed, and there was nothing left to do but load the crew's supplies back onto the ship. No one else would ever know that the Miguel expedition had ever taken place. But the perfect white skull came to pass through nearly every major museum in America, its discovery credited entirely to the crew of the exploration vessel First Blood. The Basement Window is written and produced by GM Napic. If you like this show and you would like to support it, you can do so at patreon.com/thebasementwindow. Enjoy what little time you have left.